Here's a puzzle that haunts evolutionary biology. How did the weakest ape, slower than cheetahs, smaller than bears, lacking fangs or claws, come to dominate Earth? The answer isn't what you'd expect. We didn't conquer through superior strength or cunning brutality. We won because we became the friendliest species on the planet. This isn't feel-good speculation. It's a revolutionary understanding of human evolution, backed by decades of research across primates, domesticated animals, and ancient human fossils. Yet this same capacity for cooperation harbors a terrifying shadow, the ability to dehumanize those outside our circle. Understanding this paradox isn't just academic, it's essential for navigating our fractured modern world. Traditional survival of the fittest interpretations distorted evolution, glorifying ruthless competition and justifying social Darwinism. But Darwin emphasized that communities with the most sympathetic members flourish most. Modern research confirms this spectacularly. Across species, from baboon troops to wolf packs, aggressive individuals may dominate short-term but suffer devastating costs: chronic stress, compromised immunity, reduced reproduction, shorter lives. Meanwhile, cooperation drove nature's greatest innovations, from bacterial partnerships becoming mitochondria to plant-pollinator relationships sustaining ecosystems. Our evolutionary journey proves this dramatically. Homo sapiens appeared 200,000, 300,000 years ago, but remained culturally stagnant for over 100,000 years, nearly going extinct. The turning point came 50,000 years ago, not from bigger brains, but enhanced cooperative communication. This ability to work with strangers sparked explosive innovation. Projectile weapons, sophisticated clothing, long-distance trade, symbolic art. We didn't get smarter, we got friendlier, and that changed everything. Dogs possess remarkable social intelligence that even chimpanzees lack. Show a dog a pointing gesture toward hidden food, and they immediately understand your helpful intention. Chimpanzees struggle with this consistently. This isn't learned. Puppies who've never met humans follow pointing gestures successfully, while socialized wolves perform barely above chance. Domestication rewired canine cognition in ways parallel to human evolution. The most compelling evidence comes from Dmitry Believ's Siberian experiment. After Stalin executed his brother for genetic research, Dmitry bred foxes solely for friendliness toward humans. After 44 years, friendly foxes transformed dramatically, not just behaviorally, but physically, displaying shorter snouts, floppy ears, curly tails, and colorful coats. Remarkably, they could follow human pointing gestures while regular foxes chose randomly. Breeding for friendliness accidentally enhanced cooperative communication abilities. This process likely began through self-domestication. When humans arrived in Eurasia 50,000 years ago, our garbage created opportunities for wolves brave enough to approach camps. After generations of natural selection for friendliness, they developed different traits and abilities. This continues today. Urban wildlife show reduced aggression and lower stress than rural counterparts. But could this occur without human involvement? Bonobos provide a fascinating answer. Bonobos share a common ancestor with chimpanzees, but evolved dramatically different societies. Unlike often violent chimpanzees, bonobos have never been observed killing another bonobo. No single male dominates. Some highest-ranking bonobos are babies whose mothers remain in the group, with adult males behaving submissively around infants. This transformation stems from female bonobos evolving strategies to prevent male aggression. They obscure ovulation and form coalitions against aggressive males. Unlike chimpanzees who only help relatives, bonobo females help all females, even newcomers. This solidarity emerged because food resources south of the Congo River became more plentiful, making cooperation more advantageous than competition. In this environment, mama's boys showing friendliness toward females achieve greater reproductive success than aggressive males. Female preference for friendliness literally drove evolution of a more peaceful society, demonstrating how environmental conditions can select for cooperation over aggression. We display classic domestication markers, reduced facial prognathism, smaller teeth, decreased sexual dimorphism. Most distinctively, our white sclera, unique among primates, make our gaze direction highly visible, facilitating complex social interactions. Other primates have dark sclera that camouflage gaze, but our almond-shaped eyes broadcast where we're looking, enabling sophisticated cooperative communication from birth. Babies use eye contact to trigger oxytocin release in parents, creating mutual bonding cycles essential for survival. When animals are selected for friendliness, juvenile traits persist into adulthood through neural crest cells, embryonic stem cells influencing virtually every domestication trait, adrenal glands, ear and tail cartilage, skin pigmentation, facial bones, teeth, and brain aspects affecting neurohormones like serotonin and oxytocin. Humans show unique developmental patterns. We're born with brains only a quarter their adult size versus half for other apes, making us exceptionally helpless. Yet by 9 to 12 months, we develop sophisticated social cognition. Two-year-old humans significantly outperform bonobo and chimpanzee infants in social problem solving despite less developed brains. Our brains maintain fetal growth rates for 2 years after birth, particularly in parietal regions housing our theory of mind network. Unlike early social cognition, human self-control develops slowly, not reaching adult levels until our early 20s. Rachel bears machete scars from tribal violence in eastern Congo, physical reminders of how cooperation enables extreme cruelty. The same mechanisms allowing extraordinary teamwork facilitate dehumanization of outsiders. Remarkably little triggers this psychology. Even arbitrary differences like armbands or eye color create group antagonism. The human self-domestication hypothesis suggests our worst behaviors toward other groups involve dampening our theory of mind network, creating blindness to outsiders' humanity. Brain scans confirm this. Photographs of people perceived as low in competence and warmth decrease activity in regions attributing full humanity while activating the amygdala. Oxytocin, the love hormone, promoting within-group bonding, makes us more likely to punish outsiders. Dutch men given oxytocin were 3 times more likely to donate to group members and 25% less likely to sacrifice someone with a Dutch name versus an Arab name. This pattern appears universally. Americans rated certain ethnic groups as less than fully human, correlating with support for torture and drone strikes. White university students overestimate Black children's ages by about 5 years, meaning a 13-year-old Black child is perceived as 18, old enough for adult prosecution. Groups who perceive themselves as dehumanized will dehumanize in return, creating dangerous cycles that escalate rapidly in social media environments. We evolved as egalitarian hunter-gatherers, but agriculture brought despotism as societies grew. The Industrial Revolution's breakthrough was constitutional democracy, systems limiting power through checks and balances. America's founders understood our tendency toward group identity and dehumanization. James Madison observed that mankind has such strong propensity to fall into mutual animosities that even frivolous and fanciful distinctions can spark violent conflicts. Research confirms the most effective antidote to dehumanization is contact. Holocaust rescuers had close pre-war relationships with Jewish neighbors. White children attending integrated schools in the 1960s grew up more likely to support interracial marriage. Even imagining positive contact with stigmatized groups increases empathy, creating reciprocal humanization. Cities at their best create vibrant communities mixing diverse populations. Effective urban design includes mid-rise buildings maintaining street connection, mixed-income housing, pedestrian-friendly sidewalks, and communal spaces. For humans to thrive, we need spaces facilitating interaction, parks, cafes, theaters, where we meet neighbors and exchange ideas. To maintain healthy democracy, we must design spaces where we can meet without fear, disagree respectfully, and befriend those least like ourselves. Our survival once depended on expanding circles of cooperation. It still does.